to be another way out of that. A new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
This new holiday of yours is scratching me right where I itch.
Let's do it then.
All right.
Festivus is back!
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America Live?
This tradition that we've created, inadvertently, it seems, but people, I genuinely talk to people. You wouldn't believe. I genuinely talk to people that, you know, they tell me this is part of their holiday tradition. We're like on par with the peanut special. So.
I don't know if I like that sound. But...
There you go.
We've had 70-some years of ufology, but this is a remarkable moment without much heat, as far as I can tell.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Banal of America Audio Holiday Special, featuring Stanton Friedman.
Happy Holidays!
With your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. And when we use that tagline, no comparison, really what comes to mind is what we're going to do tonight. Happy holidays, my friends. It is the 13th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special featuring the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman. It is probably my proudest tradition, I think. Aside from doing 10 years of this program, doing 13 years of interviews with Stan Friedman, and 15 total when you count a whole bunch of the other ones that I've done, is kind of what I hang my hat on for all these years. It's been just an outstanding ride, a tremendous fun experience. I don't know if you know this, Stan. We're wrapping up the show sort of as a weekly entity this year, but I hope to keep bringing back... yeah, I got a whole kind of other projects I'm working on, so I want to try some other stuff other than radio. So, but I plan on bringing back the holiday special next year if you're down, of course. I don't want this tradition to end until one of us can't be doing it. So hopefully you're still down with that.
I got 7 more years to go. My folks both live to be 90. I'm 83, so I'll be here.
All right, I'm in too, so we're going to – They've got us now, Stan. They've got us. So thank you so much. Happy holidays. Welcome back. You know, you really need an introduction, but of course we'll give you one anyway. 40-plus years in ufology, maybe 50-plus at this time. He put Roswell on the map. He put MJ-12 on the map. You know, his footprint on this field is tremendous. He is the giant upon whose shoulders many of us stand. He's the author of Crash at Corona, Top Secret Magic, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, which he co-authored with Kathy Martin, Flying Saucers and Science, as well as Science Was Wrong, which he also co-authored with Kathy Martin. And I think there's one more new one, right?
Yes, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers, also with Kathy.
There you go, nice. So it's a real thrill to have you back, Stan. And like I said, you know, this tradition that we've created, inadvertently, it seems, but people, I genuinely talk to people. You wouldn't believe. I genuinely talk to people that, you know, they tell me this is part of their holiday tradition. We're like on par with the peanut special for some people.
I don't know if I like that sound, but...
There you go. Now, keep me on my toes, because I've had a bad radio connection for a while. So if I get if I start getting crackly, just give me a smack. I can take it. Don't worry about, you know, the listeners. They prefer that than hearing all the crackles. Now, there's I'm chomping at the bit to talk to you about this. I hope that you've heard about the big New York Times article that came out this weekend.
Of course.
Yes.
How could I not?
Yeah, thank you. Good. Well, I was having a nightmare. We'd be on the air, and I'd have to try that. I might somehow, you know, it would tip you off to it. So, because you're luckily for you, you're not on social media like me, because I'm just bombarded with. Because you know, I don't know how it works. It's like you're friends with people, and it's all algorithms. And next thing you know, all your friends are constantly posting things. I'm friends with all these people in ufology. It's like I've been bombarded with hot takes over the last 3 days all kinds of way, you know, different thought pieces on this from all different UFO researchers with all different perspectives on it, ranging, you know, from they think it's a big conspiracy, they think it's, you know, they're nonplussed about it, they're thrilled about it. So, and quite frankly, you know, you were the first person I ever interviewed. You're the guy that really got me into this. For a lot of people, you're the face and voice of UFOs. So, and I don't think you've, I don't listen to a lot of shows. So maybe you've talked to somebody since Saturday, but yeah. I haven't heard your take on it yet, and I'm sure a lot of people also haven't. So what, with that long introduction, what is your take on this story?
It's a very shocking and impressive story. You know, many UFO stories are sort of half baloney and half excitement and stuff like that. But this one, it's got the right names. I mean, there are five former government officials that went on stage with DeLong, Tom DeLong, a musician, a rock musician, and said extraordinary things. And they all had fancy titles. And they all came across very well. I was very impressed. And what they basically said was that there was a secret program from like 2007 to 2012 and probably thereafter, in which an organization which nobody had ever heard of, but on the fifth floor of the Pentagon, was investigating UFOs for the government. I mean, it was a government organization. And
right.
The people who put this together, Harry Reid, for goodness sakes, he was the Senate leader, and he was one of the moving guys on this one. And, you know, how much more respectable can you get?
Right.
And so it was a very intriguing thing. It's as if somebody pushed a button somewhere, and I wish I knew where and who, that said, okay, guys, now you can talk about this. I mean, guys like Luis Elizondo had a very fancy position, and there he is on the air, you know, talking straight out. There are flying saucers.
Yeah.
And this was an incredible period in time. In other words, we've had 70-some years of ufology, but this is a remarkable moment without much equal, as far as I can tell. And it got picked up in some places. I haven't heard a lot of noise from the nasty, noisy negativists yet. I'm sure it'll be out there.
Oh, Stan, yeah. I've already seen, I told you, I've been bombarded with hot takes. I've seen a Seth Shostak hot take. I'll have to, I'll ask you another question while I'm talking to you. I'll try and take it up if you want some choice quotes from Seth on the topic. But
I haven't heard Seth's quotes yet.
I'll
he
see if I can
woke
find
up.
Yeah. So I think that's about as ringing an endorsement as you can get, in a sense, saying, you know, this is a pretty profound story. Now, obviously, everyone says, you know, it's, I guess in a way, and I think history will say, and also, it's sort of an argument of semantics. Is this like the big D disclosure, or is it sort of like the first step to disclosure? We won't know, really, anyway. But a lot of people are, they seem to be thinking that this is the moment they have been waiting for. Let's put it that way.
I would say it is one of the moments. In other words, it's going to get bigger because we haven't seen all the formerly classified reports. 5 years of stuff, that's a long time. We haven't seen all that. And it sounds like it's declassified. But high-level people saying very positive, definite, clear things. Now, it's interesting how they try to avoid using the term, well, I think they're extraterrestrial. They'll say maybe, you know, I don't think they're from here. But they will say there was a cover-up, an organization whose name has never shown up in public before. And the tone was, I found, particularly intriguing. Now, I don't know how much credit goes to Tom DeLong for putting this whole thing together. And, you know, why Tom? He's obviously had a long-term interest in stuff and a sharp guy. He made a nice presentation. And so I'm very pleased at the event. I want to know more. You always want to know more.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm waiting. Now, I hadn't heard what Seth had said, and I'm anxious to hear that, I can imagine. But
I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you in a moment, yeah.
Okay.
So it is interesting. It is very interesting. I think I made a point writing about it for Coast to Coast, that it does seem like we're on the way to disclosure, but there's a long way to go from what we've been told now, which is that the government admits that they have an interest in contemporary times in the subject, to aliens are coming to Earth. You know,
well,
like there's a
journey
here we have to make.
They were avoiding saying that. Look, I don't have anything I need to worry about. I can say what I darn please. So I can stick my neck out and say the evidence is overwhelming that some of these things are intelligently controlled extraterrestrial spacecraft. Now, others are afraid if they say that they'll be laughed at. Well, I don't worry about that. After 700 lectures, I don't get laughed at, except when I make a joke, but that's not, you know, that's different. So I don't need to be so conservative, in other words. I've been out there, and I know what the reaction is. You know, after 700 lectures, a pretty good sampling of it, all over the world, 50 states, 10 provinces, and 19 countries. That's a pretty good sampling, you know, from one end of the planet to the other. So it's a very special time to give people a chance to stand up and recognize that they think, as most people do, as I've found, that the planet's being visited. The flying saucers are real, but most people are afraid to admit that because they're going to get laughed at, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I've been out there. I've stated it. I don't get laughed at.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly okay. And so this is a turning point. It's a whole new world, in other words. And what I'm waiting for, you know, it's Christmas time, that sort of gets in the way, but I'm expecting a flood of people coming out of the woodwork, so to speak, where media people in different cities are going public and saying things, and people come to them and say, well, you know, I've never told anybody, but.
Right.
And especially former military people and government people and so forth. But when five guys who formerly had high-ranking posts in the government, and I was very impressed by those guys, stand up and straightforwardly say these things are real, and there was a program that we haven't been told about and so forth.
Yeah.
That's big news. And like I say, Harry Reid was the...
He's a major player.
Major player is the right word. And so it's nice to have that. And sure, I got a few calls. No, nobody was saying give Sam credit for any of this stuff. But I'll take some credit, you know, after the first 500 broadcasts.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah, man. Come on. Yeah, you deserve, you know, come on. You, as I said before, you are the giant upon whose shoulders many of us stand, including a lot of these guys, I'm sure. And I'll say this. I mean, Listen, I'm as cynical as anybody in this field. I was super skeptical about this stuff. And I've seen a lot of people respond to this story by sort of just digging in their heels on whatever take they had on this at the beginning. And it's like, I'll be the first to admit, I underestimated these guys. I mean, I'm still kind of weary about what they're doing. But throughout the last few months on the show, I've said, do something. Stop talking and do something and stop asking for my attention. And folks, they went and did something. So and you
right.
have to give credit where credit is due. You have, I mean, you know. So I just wanted that sort of on the record because, you know, so many people in this field, it's like they don't want to – something happens and they can't react. Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to do a 180, folks, but my attitude is like for all my criticism of this group, they've delivered something, and that's to be excited about.
I am.
No, I know. I'm speaking for myself. Okay, let's get to our buddy Seth Shostak. So I've dug up the article here, and it's from Inverse.com. It was published yesterday, and I'm going to get right to the quote. The gist of it is that Shostak says that, this is the quote. It's a little disturbing that Bob Bigelow is involved, and he says Bob Bigelow doesn't need more money. He's a very likable guy, but he's convinced all along that we're being visited, in quotes. And it doesn't mean aliens are visiting us, that's in brackets there, just because a person of note thinks it's true. All right, so he's saying it doesn't mean the ETH is real just because he thinks it's true. The thing that's a little disturbing about this is that it seems that a lot of money for this study went to Bob Bigelow. I think that if you really wanted to investigate this stuff, the thing to do is to give this money to scientists or experts in the field, i.e., that don't have a dog in the fight.
But these, most of the scientists out there who comment about UFOs are not experts in the field. I found this, you know, I've done a number of debates. I've appeared with all these guys. Seth and I did a debate, and I noticed that he very recently commented, just because I won the debate doesn't mean that I was right. That's a begrudging way of looking at things. I think anybody who listened to the debate would know that Seth didn't have any facts at hand to defend his position. You know, it's very straightforward. There aren't any, these guys, and what I constantly harp on with these guys, they haven't studied the evidence. When Seth and I did three lectures on the Queen Elizabeth II coming from Southampton, New York to New York, Southampton, England to New York City, and nothing happening in the North Atlantic in December, which it was. But we each gave three lectures. We were cordial to each other. We each listened to the other guy's lectures. In the course of my lecture, of course, I mentioned five large-scale scientific studies, which I think if you're going to have an opinion about this subject, you should study the scientific studies. We're scientists, Seth. Don't forget that. And so I asked, after talking about each one, how many people here have read this? There were a few hundred people at the lecture. And he didn't raise his hand for any of them. And he and I debated on the radio, and I won the debate coast to coast very handily. What was it? 20? It was like...
It was a blowout. It was a blowout.
It was pretty... Now, it wasn't as much of a blowout as it was with Michael Shermer.
Right.
And I've got an announcement for you. Michael is editor of Skeptic Magazine, Dr. Shermer. And we debated. This all came about because Seth and Michael and I and a few other people appeared with Larry King. And I asked Seth if he would, we could have a debate on Coast to Coast, and he agreed. And then I asked Michael, and we did. And with Michael, I got 80% of the vote, and he got 20% of the vote. He didn't know anything. Well, we are going to have a rematch, only this one in person, not on the radio. Would you believe, on April the 8th in Vancouver, British Columbia, Pangburn Associates, which I had never heard of, they have a philosophy outfit, and they sponsor debates around the world, apparently defending against any crazy notions like flying saucers. And Michael and I are doing a debate on April the 8th on the stage at a big facility in Vancouver, and they're paying me nicely, and I say I'm going to challenge, I'm going to beat them again. We'll see.
There you go.
I mean, I'm getting older, after all, and I'm a lot older than he is. So,
well, don't go easy on him for that reason.
Well, I'll try not to.
Just because he's a youngster.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because somebody ought to do, there have been over a dozen PhD theses done about UFOs, and I'd like to see one that looks at the silly nonsense of the nasty, noisy negativist, you know.
Oh, God. I think you need like a psych ward to do a study like that.
What bothers me, and it surprised me from the start, it shouldn't have, but it did, that respectable scientists, and I consider Seth respectable, I mean, even if he's part of the SETI community, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, based on some of the strangest thinking I've ever heard. Hey, there's probably aliens out there, but they ain't coming here, folks. They're trying
yeah.
to reach us with radio signals. Now, why would they expect us to listen, and what would they say to us? These things we don't talk about, you understand, but we got to keep listening.
Right.
And they totally ignore the UFO stuff. Look for references in their book. I read their books. They don't read mine, of course.
Of course.
They wouldn't dare to admit that. But so there's nobody coming here because you can't get here from there, and there is no evidence, and governments can't keep secrets. And what do these guys know about a couple of things? keeping secrets. Most astronomy research is not classified, frankly. I spent 14 years working under security. Secondly, I worked on a number of studies of interstellar travel. These guys don't get involved in engineering. How do you get here from there and so forth? The space program wasn't designed by guys who know about the technology of getting into the space in the astronomical community. They had nothing to do with that. That's good, solid engineering and people who have literally studied the right evidence. So it's a crazy thing. What are they? And also, they constantly come forth with ideas about why aliens would behave in such a way. Now, when did these guys become experts on human, no less, alien behavior? Astronomy doesn't have anything to do with people, you know what I mean.
Right.
So it's a strange situation. They're carrying the torch, but basically it says, give your money over here, guys.
Right. Yeah, it's
that's
very
why I call it Silly Effort to Investigate, SETI.
That's right.
They don't like me to call it that, but I don't see where it makes any sense. If you're interested in extraterrestrial life, you look at the data that's related to that. Well, we find several thousand physical trace cases in ufology. We find hundreds of observations of alien beings associated with alien craft on the ground. What are they talking about? Somebody's going to send us a radio signal, folks. What frequency should we listen to? And we'll argue about that. They will argue with each other, you know, what's the right frequency to listen to? They come up with theoretical arguments which have nothing to do with the real world.
Right.
You know, if they had picked up a number of signals, you could say, well, they've got a basis for their assumptions. But they haven't. I've got data. When I talk about UFO observations, they're all over the place. And on radar, you know, in photographs. And these guys won't even look at that evidence.
Yeah.
So it's one of those strange arguments. I'll leave the psychologist to try to decide what's cooking here.
Right. It's very, it's like akin to them shouting out the window when there's people walking around right outside. So, you know, it's very strange. Yeah, and it's funny, he pretty much said, among the other stuff he said was just that I find it hard to believe that anybody's covering it up because it's been going on for so long, which is pretty much what you just said. And something else along those lines, yeah. But
they can't even think of a good reason for covering up when the technology thing. Wouldn't every government on the planet like to be able to duplicate the behavior of flying saucers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One would think so. It's not a theoretical construct. It's, if I can fly like that, I'm going to rule the country, rule the planet, you know. That's significant. The United States will spend, or the planet will spend, $1 trillion this year on things military. Obviously, that's high priority.
Exactly. Well, he sums it up here at the end, and I think this is a good jumping off point to sort of the next line of conversation, in a sense. He says the bottom line is somebody spent $20 million of your tax dollars to look into this, and they didn't come up with anything. That's what he says.
Didn't come up with anything.
We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know. We don't know what they came up with. Now, ostensibly, allegedly, or however you want to say it, I guess the Washington Post reported that they produced a 490-page report. So I'm wondering if we're going to get our hands on that or if it's classified or what the status of that is. I hope some journalist out there who has the ability to ask that question of the right person is tracking down this 500-page report.
Yeah, me too. I hadn't heard that 500-page number. So I'll give the guy the Washington Post credit. Let's go for the data. Let's go for the facts. And SETI is trapped here. They're looking for money so that they can keep listening for signals. Now, what they expect to find, who knows? I've read their books. I don't see any coherent picture. I think they expect aliens to land on a White House lawn and say, hi, guys, this is what it's like out there. What are you guys doing here? Give me a tour of your facilities or something like that.
Yeah.
Like Earthlings are worth talking to as equals. Let's hope that nobody out there killed 50 million people in their last war. We did. You know, is that a sign of advanced structure in nature? I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's weird. And of course, there's a chapter in my book, Flying Saucers and Science, about SETI and science and silliness, I think, because I think their approach is silly. You know, we got footprints, and you're telling me there ain't nobody here. You know?
So I guess a lot of this, in a way, depends now on what happens next. Like, if... You know, you often call for, like, a young Wilbur and Bernstein to dig in. I mean, there people are purportedly yes. digging into this. Like, the argument I've heard from a lot of people who've been in this for a long time is that, you know, by the end of the week, oh, God, you know, Christmas is Monday, the holidays, it's like, this thing's going to be, by the time 2018 starts, this thing's going to be already old news. So it's going to take sort of, I hope that these people behind this revelation have more stuff to start rolling out, because it takes something to keep the people's attention.
Well, I hope so too, because they mentioned the name of this group that was investigating all those years. Let's see their reports.
Right.
I don't know anybody got permission to release what was classified data. Somebody had to say the right things in the right places. Now, and you look at the titles of those five guys who spoke out. They're very impressive. These are not dinks.
Yeah.
And so I presume they obviously had guts enough to speak out, but without fear of somebody's going to come after them for releasing classified data. And of course, they're in the government's in a peculiar situation. If you clamp down on somebody for releasing classified data, then are you admitting that it's true? You know, that's a major problem. I'm
right.
going to put you in jail for releasing classified information. Oh, it is classified, is it? You know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how it works necessarily, but it's like somebody now should be like calling the Pentagon and being like, okay, what? Give us the information that you have. Even if you have to file an FOIA or something, like what's classified, what isn't, you know, what. Give us as much information. Like, that's what I'm kind of hoping for, that maybe even somebody in Congress or something will take an interest in this and ask, God forbid, or God willing, we'll get a Trump tweet, you know, that'll...
Well, yeah, I don't know where he fits in the picture, but I do know that I was very impressed to see Harry Reid speaking out.
Mm.
You know, we're talking, he was the majority leader in the Senate.
Yeah.
You know, that's... pretty darn high up the tree, as far as I'm concerned. And he came out pretty straightforwardly and taking credit, as a matter of fact. He was one of the instigators for this program. Like, he was proud of that.
Yeah.
And I was impressed with that. Of course, he isn't in the Senate anymore, but it still takes guts to do that in today's world. Even though I know from the 700 lectures and I don't know how many thousands of interviews that I haven't had a hard time from people. It's been years since I had a debunker.
Yeah. And
people are ready, willing, and able to accept the notion that the planet's being visited. The question is, okay, what does that mean to us? Are they bad guys? Are they giving us technology? You know, there are a lot of questions.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah.
Do the Russians know more than we do, or the Chinese? And as somebody, maybe it was Reid, said, other countries are far ahead of us in releasing data. And that should shake a few people up, like not Seth probably. But look, Seth's a good guy. And I feel sorry for him because he's got an indefensible position.
Mm, yeah.
Ain't nobody coming here, but they're out there, and if all we got to do is listen, and we'll find them. And there's nothing to defend that position.
It just sounds so antiquated anyway, like just completely out of touch, you know. It's like they've been doing it since the 70s.
Yeah, and they haven't looked at the cover-up data. I mean, I show blacked-out documents. I show whited-out documents from the NSA and the CIA. There's no question of their validity. They came from those agencies, Freedom of Information requests and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when you get the NSA admitting that we got 156 top-secret Umbra UFO documents, and when you look at them, you can read one sentence per page. You know, it's ludicrous. And the CIA... first of all, years ago they admitted they had a release under Freedom of Information Act request about 800 pages of documents, which were heavily redacted. But there were a bunch. Those were only up through secret. When I went after the top secret stuff, it took me years, but I got some. And they were almost completely blocked out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I get people tell me, oh, they're not covering up anything. There's nothing classified about UFOs. Oh, really?
Well, now we can just point to this thing, right? I mean, that's the victory, I guess, in a sense, for UFO advocates. That now people can be like, well, at least the government had an interest. So, what do you think of that? You know, and Shostak's right in a sense so far that we don't know what they figured out. I don't understand. I wish there was more of a clamoring in a sense where, I suppose, you know, the public is catching up to where you and I are, Stan, the listeners of the show, where it's like they're just opening their mind to the possibility of this. And we've kind of moved past the idea of, are UFOs real? Of course UFOs are real. Well, we want to figure out what they are. And
what they want. And right? Are there many different types with many different things going for them, many different motivations? And also, how well populated is the local neighborhood? What I find has impressed people is the recognition that there are planets all over the place. We didn't know that 40 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. Now we know, the latest data suggests that there's between 1 and 1.6 planets per star. That means within 100 light years, which is just down the street, there are, as it happens, there are 10,000 stars. And that means that there are roughly 16,000 planets within that 100-year, light-year range. That's a heck of a lot. And that's next door.
Yeah.
And they, we've been smitten with the crazy notion that, gee, the nearest star is 4.3 light-years away, and you know, if anybody's coming here, they'd have to come from hundreds or thousands of light years away. And now we realize, holy cow, there are thousands of planets within less than 100 light years. And so that's a shocking notion for these guys.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, it took a long time for us to get around to realizing that the world's kind of, and the universe are kind of old places. In 1650 or 60 or so, a great astronomer figured out that the world was created in 4004 B.C. You know, that's not very long ago, 6,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And now the number for the Earth is over 4 billion years.
Wow.
And that's quite a difference, you know. And suddenly, if it was only 6,000 years ago, then we know a lot about our history. But if it was 4 billion years ago, we don't know what all has been going on in that time, how many others have come and gone, and how many started long before we did. We know that our known history is measured in thousands of years. You know, we don't have any civilizations that we're talking about that are a million years old that we know anything about. I'm not saying they weren't there. I'm just saying we don't know anything about
them. Exactly.
And so suddenly we're not the big shots we'd like to think we are. Now, that beats the heck out of the SETI people because they think, as astronomers, they're at the top of the the roost, you know. After all, they're concerned about the universe.
Yeah.
You know, and all I have to do is laugh. And we live in a place where the latest numbers, when Frank Drake was saying maybe 6,000 planets or 8,000 planets on the planet, now the number where people are talking about casually is 100 billion in the galaxy. There's a long way between 6,000 and 100 billion.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, it's an exciting story. It's definitely an exciting story. And so.
And I have to give credit for these guys having guts enough to speak out.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, okay, but what? This is kind of like a complicated question in a sense, because it's like there's a lot of layers to it, but it's generally the main sort of opinion I've seen from people who are in the UFO field and have been in for a long time in the UFO bubble, that and who are just always sort of like on guard about this stuff, that this is all orchestrated, that this is all, you know, this, like you said, like how could they, who gave them permission to do this kind of thing, that like this is all, you know, that it's orchestrated, that this is all like a public relations move toward what end, who knows yet.
We certainly don't know yet.
Yeah.
The end goal and target of all this stuff is, other than they got a lot of newsmen talking.
Yeah. But you think it, yeah. So it seems like you're, I guess sort of the caveat to that is like people, they say that with sort of an air of warning in a sense, that like we should be weary of what we're told here as this thing unfolds. I mean, that makes sense, right? Obviously we should be weary.
Well, you should be weary, but. Let's face it, look at the titles of these five guys who are speaking out. They're very impressive. Pentagon officials, is that the right term, I suppose? And, you know, I get a kick out of somebody saying they spent $22 million of government money. Wow, how terrible. And, you know, when I was working on nuclear airplanes back in 1958, our budget for General Electric that year was $100 million when that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
$22 million spent over several years is peanuts.
Right, you right. I guess what I was trying to say in a sense was like the big D word that isn't disclosure, like disinformation. But to me, it's like I'm not quite sure. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, and I'm not quite sure what they would be trying to disinform us about. You know what I'm saying? If that makes any sense.
I can't either.
Befuddled.
Yes.
I'm
and you notice we haven't hit the top secret stuff, and we haven't hit the analysis of the bodies. They say there's a building in which there are a lot of parts.
Right, right,
and,
yeah.
You know, they're complaining about Bob Bigelow, who doesn't need their money. But I got Bob Bigelow's first UFO research grant a number of years ago. I was very impressed with him, not because he had money, but because of how he made decisions, how he understood the right questions to ask. Not everybody has that. Bob's a very sharp guy. That's how he got to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
Let's face it. And so I had personal dealings with him directly and was very favorably impressed. And he said, I've got money, and I checked on him because I had never heard of him. And I have people I know in Las Vegas, and oh, yes, Dan, he is indeed. And he asked, can you think of any research projects? And I said, oh, I can think of a bunch of them. He said, well, write them down. The next day, I faxed him, I don't know, 10 ideas for research programs. And he said, well, that's too many. Let's pick one. And so I did, and I gave him a write-up. And he said, how much would it cost? And I gave him a write-up on that. And the next day, I told him how much it would take. He said yes, and there was a check in my bank account at the end of the week. I mean, I like that when you can deal straight up with people instead of saying, well, I'll get back to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, next month, next year, whatever. He knows that it takes money to achieve research objectives, like it or not.
Right, right. Well, I guess, go ahead.
I think, well, just that I think Seth and the SETI cultists, as I call them, and you can tell him I said that. He's probably heard me say it.
I haven't.
They're jealous and not getting money, but what do they plan to do? Well, we're going to listen, and I'm sure we're going to listen to something useful.
Yeah.
Oh, really? How do you know what frequency to use, incidentally? You throw darts at a dartboard? Or do you... You have a newsletter from the Alien Association. Oh, these are the frequencies we're using this year.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah,
silly.
It'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. I mean, I guess my main two questions, not for you, for coming out of the story, I guess, is okay, where's the data? Where's the report? And where's the stuff you got in the warehouse? And can we find out what, you know,
yes.
I mean, they laid it out. So, you know, I don't know whose job it is to find out that information or if they're going to be forthcoming with it, but that's, you know, there needs to be interest from everybody where this stuff is.
Yes.
And if there isn't,
I'm impressed by having somebody like Harry Reid
right
speaking out. We're not talking about the bottom of the food chain here. We're talking near the top.
Yeah.
And that impresses me. He didn't get there by being an idiot. It sounds like he has been interested for a long time. He's talked to the right people. He's pursued his interest, and now he's speaking out. And I got to give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, those are sort of my big questions coming out of this. And, yeah, it's really exciting. I'm interested to see how it unfolds. Have you, I guess the last sort of sub-question to all this, have you been in any way, like, contacted or involved with this To the Stars group or Tom DeLonge? Or I know you said you were granted funding from Bigelow a while ago, but
yes.
Or any of these, so this completely, you didn't know anything about this this weird program that...
Well, I'd heard about Tom DeLonge, and I had read his big, he's got a big book out there.
Right.
Fiction, but I had read his book, and I was worried because it was long on story and short on evidence. And so, you know, what's he got to back it up? That's what I want to hear. All kinds of stories out there.
Right, but that's kind of what I was saying, yeah. And then this thing came out, yeah.
They came up with, a lot more statements from a lot more people and a clear indication, you know, when they give a title for the program and the name of the office and the government that funded it.
Well, I mean, the Pentagon confirmed it. I mean, that's all you could really, you know. If the Pentagon didn't confirm it, yeah. If the Pentagon was like, hey, get out of here, this story wouldn't have gotten to the New York Times. So it's like, clearly,
right.
You know. Like I said,
well,
someone needs to be.
I know Leslie Kane, who was one of the three authors.
Yeah.
And she's written an outstanding book. She's been doing outstanding research on this subject for a long time. Gutsy, sharp, incisive. She goes digging. She gets other people involved. What's the name? The Washington guy, John. He worked for
Podesta?
Podesta, yes.
Yeah.
She worked closely with him. So I'm impressed with that. These are people I know, known her for years, and I've read her work. What I always look for is somebody can make claims, that's easy, but what evidence do you provide that backs those claims up?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah,
and that's where the nasty, noisy negativists come up very short. They do their research by proclamation, not by investigation.
That's right.
Leslie Kane does investigation, and so do those other guys. And so I was impressed with Elizondo. I'd never heard of him before, but when I heard him speak and I read some of his background, wow. He was in a good position to know a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's the perfect kind of whistleblower that people have been calling for a long time. So,
yeah.
It's like I said, it's exciting, interesting, and we'll see what happens. And you know, that's the best we can do.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that are, like rush to sort of say this is that and this is the other. You know, Stephen Greer said, oh well, the word, as I said, Stan, everyone's got an opinion on this. It's amazing. Stephen Greer said that, you know, the word threat in the title of the thing means that they're going to try and spin this as an alien invasion scenario we have to protect against. So it's, who knows?
Well, one thing for sure, we have to be concerned. As soon as you admit that there's anybody else out there and that they're probably more advanced than we are because we haven't been advanced for very long, then you have to be worried. What are their intentions?
Right.
You'd be foolish not to worry about that. Oh, they're all good guys. You know, let's have dinner.
Yeah.
Hey, we have given plenty of cause to other civilizations out there to be very concerned about it. It's not just 50 million people killed in one war. You know, but the fact that the Earth is spending $1 trillion this year on things military, the fact that we have mastered nuclear fusion, which is good not only for H-bombs, but will get us to the stars, which suddenly makes us a threat to the neighborhood with our background. We're not nice guys.
Right.
You know, we only destroyed, 1,700 cities during World War II. These are nice guys? You know, Earthlings are not the model civilization of great concern for its citizens. We're nasty grabbers, you know.
Exactly. And just and yeah, you're right about that. I hadn't really sort of thought of it that way, where it's like, sure, this may get spun as a threat, but it's like, we don't necessarily know it isn't. So we're not, we may not be being bamboozled, folks. We may actually, you know, we may actually want to assess the threat level of this situation. So
what we have to realize is they certainly know that we're nasty guys. Our history proves that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully,
I mean, like
they see
it
us
not.
As ineffectual, at least relatively, yeah. relatively tameable. So, like I said, it's exciting. We'll see what happens. I could sort of meander and poke at this for a while with you, but I know we've got a ton of listener questions. So let's get to those because it's part of the holiday tradition.
Sure.
We'll start out with Dee Schiller. She wants to know, if you hadn't investigated Roswell, what would you have investigated, or would you be involved in the esoteric at all? Well, since you got into Roswell around the late 70s, early 80s, I assume you would.
Yeah, 78.
Yeah. So this was like, you know.
I didn't start with Roswell.
Right, exactly.
In other words,
yes.
A lot of people think that's what got you interested. I read my first book in 58, gave my first lecture in 67, and started the Roswell research in 78. So I was already deeply involved. I provided testimony at congressional hearings in 68, for goodness sakes. I'd given hundreds of lectures all over the place before I heard about Roswell. So, you know, I'm known for Roswell because I'm the guy who broke the story, but that wasn't my introduction to ufology. It came as quite a shock. I didn't know about it when I started.
Right, exactly. Well, a lot of people also call you Dr. Friedman, so we...
Well, yeah, and I keep trying to correct them.
There's quite a lore surrounding you. I guess to reframe her question in a way that we might get some insight, if what were you kind of, I guess this may be a hard sort of thing to come up with, or maybe it isn't, but like sort of what was on your mind before you got the Roswell tip? You know,
oh.
What direction, what were you kind of thinking, what might have you done if you hadn't been tipped off about the Roswell thing? Was there something else that was sort of on your mind that you wanted to explore?
Well, I was certainly pursuing the Cosmic Watergate, the cover-up, because I've had a security clearance. I know how the security works and stuff. And I was also, what really got me excited was the technology. I mean, let's face it, my first job was working on nuclear airplanes. I worked on studies a little after that of fusion propulsion for deep space travel. I was concerned about how do you get from here to there and what are the technologies, partly because there's very few other people who've worked on so many canceled programs as I have, as many. So I'm well suited. I know about security, and I know about programs about advanced propulsion systems, and I know about systems being canceled or programs being canceled. Now, I would have pursued those things. I was already doing that. I mean, if you look at my congressional testimony in 68, I wasn't talking about Roswell. I didn't know about Roswell.
Yeah.
I was talking about technology. I was talking about what does it mean? You know, it's important for us as Earthlings to know that we're not alone in the neighborhood. I think that's very important. We
yeah.
should be worried about who's out there and how can we keep them from attacking us because we're so nasty?
All right. Well, there you go. Okay. Marco Withrow, he says he wants to know or writes, with regard to young people coming into the field, and there are far too few, how much emphasis do you think they should put into the history of ufology, not just classic cases, but the people involved in the early days of ufology as well? And he says, as always, the safest and happiest of holidays to both of you and yours. So,
well, same with regard to the writer. I think young people should dig in to dig out background because this is a multifaceted problem. For example, one thing that I find intriguing is, why would aliens come here? And then you start looking around, well, what's special about Earth? Oh, the Earth is the densest planet in the solar system, folks. That means there are more heavy metals here, and heavy metals are rare in the universe. You know, maybe these guys are out to steal our goodies. And maybe we should look more carefully at what is here that might be of concern to them. Who knows? They may have been harvesting good stuff from here for a million years. You know,
yeah.
Earth is the place where we get like actinium. You know, that sounds silly until you realize that uranium, for example, 100 years ago was used for a yellow coloring agent in certain kinds of equipment.
Really?
Yeah, that's all. Yellow coloring agent, a nice yellow color. And what its primary use was, you couldn't do it for now because it is radioactive. We need to look deeply at these questions. How many people ever heard of not only uranium, but zirconium, which makes the nuclear navy work, titanium, which helps the Air Force with all its stuff? We didn't hear about those things.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of peculiar stuff in solid-state physics, you know, and all the fancy gadgetry we have, things that we wouldn't have thought about at all 60 years ago.
Well, I wanted to ask you to jump in on this guy's question, in a sense. He says, people involved in the early days of ufology. Did you get a chance to read Mark O'Connell's Hynek biography? Because I thought it was outstanding.
Yes, I did, and I did enjoy it. I was surprised. It was better than I expected it to be. I knew Alan Hynek, and I didn't see anything to complain about. And I think he gave, to say he's the one who got people thinking they're extraterrestrials may be overstating it a little bit. But he lent his good name and his good reputation to get a lot of people involved, setting up QFOs and so forth. Now, he wouldn't, and you wouldn't expect him to. I could never get him to look at bibliographies of interstellar travel. There are sources with 3,000 references on that subject, and he wouldn't look at that stuff. On the other hand, his respectability, he's the same age as my father.
Yeah.
Born the same year, actually. So he lent his good name, and he had guts enough to stand up and have to put up with people giving him a hard time. That whole business with swamp gas, my God, how he put up with that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, that's an incredible human story. That whole story is pretty amazing.
Well, the holiday season is upon us once again, and that means spending time with family. Here with his advice on how to manage the holidays, please welcome Drunk Uncle.
It is great to be here hosting Saturday Night Fever.
Okay. So, John Gunkel, are you excited for the holidays?
The holidays are not what they used to be, Seth. You know, when I was a kid, you know, Christmas meant something. You know, people got dressed up. You know, they would travel 6 hours in a car. Nowadays, it's just, hey, could you email me dinner? Hey, could you fax me a hug?
It's the Banal of America Audio Holiday Special featuring Stanton Friedman.
Happy holidays!
You know what I like about Christmas, though? That sexy green M&M lady. I would hit that. Come on. You thought about it.
No, I really haven't.
You thought about it. Every kiss begins with K. Put that on your iPad and smoke it.